It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The global community debates further action against North Korea. The UN Security Council says it's working to craft new sanctions against Pyongyang after its latest nuclear test. The UN ambassador from Uruguay, Elbio Rosselli, current council president, spoke following an emergency session.
The members of the Security Council strongly condemned this test, which is a clear violation of Security Council Resolutions 1718 of 26, 1874 or 20 of 9, 2087 of 2013, and 2094 of 2013. And of the non-proliferation regime, and therefore a clear threat to international peace and security, continues to exist.
In Washington, U.S. spokesman John Kirby condemned the test, but stopped short of confirming the North Korean claim of its first successful hydrogen detonation.
We're still evaluating the North's claims about this test, but our initial analysis is not consistent with North Korea's claim that this was a hydrogen bomb.
North Korea Wednesday justified its need for nuclear capability to defend itself against what it calls U.S.-led efforts to isolate and pressure the regime through economic sanctions and military containment. Ivory Coast government resigned Wednesday following a promise from newly re-elected President Alassane Ouattara to bring in a new departure for the West African nation. Mr. Ouattara, who won a second five-year term with nearly 84% of the vote, reappointed Daniel Coblin-Duncan as prime minister. The resignation signals what he calls establishment of a more unified and efficient government. He promised to reduce poverty, promote ethnic and political reconciliation, write a new constitution, and share the benefits of an economic boom in the wake of a decade of strife that resulted in civil war. This is VOA News. The Pentagon says U.S.-led coalition airstrikes against Islamic State targets in Iraq and Syria killed some 2,500 militants in December. And Colonel Steve Warren told a briefing Wednesday the terror group has lost a lot of territory.
They've lost between 20 and 22,000 square kilometers in Iraq, roughly 40% of the territory that they once controlled. In Syria, maybe about 2,000 square kilometers, maybe a little bit more than that, in the ballpark of 10% of what they control.
He also said intensified coalition airstrikes have decreased IS oil production from 45,000 barrels to 34,000 a day, making IS oil revenue drop nearly one-third. The U.S. is hailing Turkey's willingness to work with Washington in efforts against the Islamic State, saying it's become much harder for foreign fighters to cross the Turkish-Syrian border and join IS. U.S. Special Presidential Envoy Brett McGurk says Turkey's deployment of resources to its 9,800-kilometer stretch of border with Syria followed a November meeting between Presidents Obama and Erdogan. Iraq's foreign minister offered Wednesday to act as mediator between its neighbors Iran and Saudi Arabia, who severed diplomatic ties with Iran over the Saudi execution of a prominent Shia cleric that prompted an Iranian mob to attack the Saudi embassy in the Iranian capital. There were more anti-Saudi protests Wednesday in Baghdad and Basra by Shia demonstrators. Meanwhile, Russia has also offered to act as mediator in the dispute. The Arab League is due to discuss the matter in a special meeting Sunday. The tiny Horn of African nation Djibouti has cut diplomatic ties with Iran following the lead of Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Sudan, and Kuwait over the Saudi execution of Shia cleric Nimr al-Nimr. Djibouti lies at the mouth of the Red Sea, across from Yemen, where a Saudi-led coalition is battling Shia Houthi rebels. The U.S. Defense Department has announced that two inmates from the Guantanamo Bay military prison in Cuba have been transferred to Ghana. The Ghanaian Foreign Ministry identifies the two former prisoners as being from Yemen and says they were cleared of all terror charges. The Pentagon says just over 100 prisoners remain at the Guantanamo base. President Obama has made closing down the prison one of his goals before leaving office next year. Chinese stocks nosedive Thursday, tumbling more than 7% in the first half hour of trading, causing Beijing's security regulator to step in and suspend trading. It was the second time this week that so-called circuit breakers were used. The regulation was employed by Chinese officials after last year's volatile exchange and sell-off. The move sent other Asian markets lower and weakened the value of the Chinese yuan currency to its lowest level since August. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Thursday, January 7th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's main opposition leaders says the country's electoral commission and the police are conniving to re-elect President Yoweri Museveni.
What is happening is quite very easy to understand. We have a 30-year regime that is extremely unpopular, and the violence is basically intended to subvert the electoral process. That is all.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the leader and presidential candidate for Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. Meanwhile, Uganda's police said Besigye and his supporters are to blame for Wednesday campaign violence. And it's becoming more and more likely that the Central African Republic presidential election will go to a second round.
Vote counting continued in Bangui Wednesday as the National Election Authority raced to beat a deadline to announce the results from the December 30th presidential poll.
That's VOA's Katerina Hoye in Bangui. Amnesty International accuses Gambia's government of infringing on female workers' freedom of expression. Zimbabwe journalists need police permission before they can report on parliamentary proceedings. And the goal to eradicate polio worldwide is within sight. Those stories, plus Mark Omar's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Uganda's main opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, a candidate in February's presidential election, says the country's National Independent Electoral Commission and the police appear to be serving as mouthpieces for the re-election of President Yoweri Museveni. This came after Ugandan police Wednesday fired tear gas and live bullets to disperse Dr. Besigye's supporters in the Bukwa district of the country, after Dr. Besigye had been invited there by leaders to visit an IDP camp in the area. The police say Dr. Besigye could not visit the area because it was not part of his campaign schedule. But Dr. Besigye says in an election campaign, candidates must be allowed to reach out to voters when and wherever they can be found, as long as the two campaigns are not in the same location at the same time. He says the violence by the police is intended to subvert the electoral process and maintain President Museveni in power.
Our supporters wanted us to see where they had been encamped, having been displaced from their land some time back. And they wanted us to see the kind of conditions under which they live. But the police will not have any of that. They said we can only go to locations that are mentioned in our campaign program, and anything that is not mentioned in our campaign program, we are not allowed to go. And, of course, this has been a developing situation where we seem now to be prisoners of some kind of a program that we laid out of public meetings that we are going to hold during this campaign. The Electoral Commission and the police seem to be taking the position that, apart from those public meetings that we have stipulated in our campaign programs, we are barred from going to any other location, which quite obviously is the most ridiculous. We are in a campaign to reach out to all our supporters whenever they can be, using the media, using person-to-person, using public meetings, using all forms of engagements. The only precaution that is normally undertaken is to make sure that there are no conflicts between the campaigning teams, that they are not in the same location at the same time. Quite obviously, the Electoral Commission is simply a mouthpiece of Mr. Museveni.
Dr. Besigye, I think the police chief said that they ordered you not to proceed and you broke through. So you don't feel that you provoked the police?
Well, the police cannot engage in unlawful orders. You cannot order me not to go into my house. Orders must be lawful. We have freedoms enshrined in our constitution here. And the police is supposed to be an enforcement of the law and order, not of disorder. So there was absolutely no reason why the police should have blockaded me from visiting the people whom I was with, who wanted me to visit their location and see the condition in which it is. As I have said anyway, it is now clearly a policy that we can only visit only the locations that are included in our schedules for public meetings, which is the most ridiculous thing in a campaign.
Dr. Besigye, I'm reading a comment in one of the local newspapers in Uganda. I think somebody that I think is a supporter of you saying that, for how long will the leper continue to suck our innocent blood while we bow down? The time has come for us to gather our spears. Would you condone anybody wanting to take on the police?
Well, you see, what the police is clearly doing is inciting violence, because once you act with impunity, once you don't respect the law, once you take law in your hand because you have guns and leave, you know, citizens at your mercy to do what you order, then quite obviously you are provoking a very, very dangerous situation.
The elections are in February. How do you think your campaign is doing? And why do you think this continued violence, why do you think is happening?
What is happening is quite very easy to understand. We have a 30-year regime that is extremely unpopular, and the violence is basically intended to subvert the electoral process.
Dr. Chisa Besigye is the leader and presidential candidate for Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. The spokesman for Uganda's police says main opposition leader Chisa Besigye and his supporters are to blame for Wednesday's campaign violence. The violence left a police officer and two other people injured in the Bukwo district in the eastern part of the country. Police spokesman Fred Enenga tells reporter Peter Clotty that the opposition leader and his supporters deviated from an agreed-upon party campaign route. He said Dr. Besigye failed to heed police warnings concerning the insecurity his unplanned visit to the IDP camp would create.
We handled a public order issue where we dispersed some violent crowd at one of the IDP camps. We used means within our dispersal powers that included the use of plastic bullets. Now, it is true that this was a public order concern that arose after one of the presidential candidates, that is for the Forum for Democratic Change, Dr. Kizza Besigye, diverted and unjustifiably chose to proceed to Terriet IDP camp. And, of course, as a result, acts of public disorder emerged from this unscheduled engagement that was actually planning. So that is what basically happened this evening.
Supporters of the FDC are saying that the police are to blame for this violent clash, for trying to suppress them.
It's on record. We've policed over 600 campaign rallies. And out of these, we only have 8 rallies where there have been incidents of alleged political violence. And policing 600 rallies with only 8 that appear to have some violence is really highly commendable for the side of the police. But you should also get to know that the FDC, as the political party, has all along been promoting politics of defiance, where they wish, in many cases, go against the guidelines of the Electoral Commission. They defy the police instructions and orders on a number of occasions to attract such ugly scenes so that they can get probably cheap propaganda points out of such conduct.
Some of the opposition groups are saying they are acting in defiance of the police because the police appear to be doing the bidding of the ruling party. The police are forceful when it comes to the opposition by trying to thwart their campaign ahead of next month's election. What do you say to such criticisms?
Again, that is not true, because we are a police that has been very, very transparent, and we entertain all sorts of complaints that come to us from all corners. In fact, I must say that we are colorblind. Now, what has been happening in many cases where we have been having issues of defiance, there has been a lot of propaganda that has been promoted by specifically, mostly members of the opposition, that they have been coming up with the use of social media mostly, claiming that there are persons who have disappeared.
Fred Enega is spokesman for the Ugandan police. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 7th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. We want to send shout out to listeners on these VOA affiliate stations, Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda, and Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Uganda, and Kenya. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. With more than 70% of the vote counted, the Central African Republic's presidential election looks set to go to a second round. Both of the two leading candidates are former prime ministers who serve under ouster President Francois Bozize. Katarina Hoya reports for VOA from Bangui.
Vote counting continued in Bangui Wednesday as the National Election Authority raced to beat a deadline to announce the results from the December 30th presidential poll. The authority's logistics officer, René Sankanga, said some votes have yet to arrive in the capital.
Mais il faut noter aussi que c'est ce matin, enfin, que nous avons reçu.
The votes from the refugees and the diaspora in Chad arrived Wednesday in Bangui, but votes from France and some regions have not yet arrived, he said. The election authority hopes they will arrive by Thursday so results can be announced. As things stood Wednesday, former Prime Minister Anicet Georges Dologele held the lead with 248,000 votes. He is followed by another former Prime Minister, Faustin Archange Todera, with 217,000 votes. It is clear that Todera has won Bangui, while Dologele's stronghold is in the populated western parts of the country. The results leave the other 28 candidates with little chance of catching up before the final results are due Thursday evening. Early this week, 19 candidates questioned the credibility of the poll and demanded the counting to be stopped. The Dakar Transitional Government, the National Transition Council, said a vote count would go ahead as planned despite logistical difficulties.
Je suis positif, je suis tout à fait positif en tant que membre de l'ANE.
Sankanga said the election authority is working 24-7 to be able to assemble the results in time. Anyone who wants to contest the final results has 10 days to do so with the country's constitutional court. If they do, a second round currently scheduled for January 31st will likely be postponed. Katerina Hoye, VOA News, Bangui.
Amnesty International says Gambia's recent decision to require all female government employees to cover their hair at work could infringe on the women's freedom of expression. The rule, which comes just weeks after President Yahya Jammeh declared the nation an Islamic Republic, applies to both Muslims and Christians. Amnesty International campaigner for Anglophone countries in West Africa, Marta Colomar, tells Ricky Shryak that the fact that the rule only applies to women concerns Amnesty and that they are monitoring how the new rule will be applied.
The information that we have is there is an executive directive that was issued on the 4th of January saying that all female staff within the government ministries, departments and agencies are no longer allowed to expose their hair during official working hours effective from December 31st. Female staff are urged to use head ties.
Is this tied to the recent announcement from Gambian President Yahya Jammeh that the country is now an Islamic Republic? I believe he announced that last month in December.
Yes, we think that this is to reinforce this idea or this commitment that he had of making Gambia an Islamic Republic.
And as I understand it, even the Christian women are going to be subject to this rule. Is that correct?
According to the policy, this executive directive, there is no discrimination about who should wear, if just Christians or just Muslims. It applies to all women.
Have you heard from any women's rights groups in the Gambia? Is this fall under a workplace discrimination? Because in West Africa, at least the parts that I'm familiar with, most women don't cover their hair.
Yeah. The thing is, like, from our point of view, because we cannot say this is right, this is not that, but obviously we care about human rights and this is our concern. And we have concern that this policy, despite the governments have some rights according to international human rights law to limit, to restrict freedom of expression, this policy doesn't guarantee the principle of non-discrimination. First of all, because it just applies to women. It doesn't say anything about men. It's just a policy for women. And the other thing is, like, it restricts freedom of expression because it doesn't allow the expression of the personal identity, which includes, like, beliefs and behaviors, forms of behavior. So it means that all those people that are Christian, they are not going to be able to behave as they are, as their personal identity. So that's why this is our concern.
Is there any concern that there will be more and more announcements that could be seen as restrictions on freedom of expression?
The thing is, like, regarding the declaration of Jammeh of the Islamic Republic, we are still monitoring the situation. First of all, because the declaration has not followed the legal procedures, so it means that this declaration to change the condition of the country should go through a reform of the constitution that hasn't taken place. So we don't know yet how this declaration is going to be implemented. So we are monitoring the situation to see when it's going to be implemented, how, and if it's going to be real at the end. And obviously this measure of the women covering their hair is like a measure to reinforce this idea. So for the time being, we are going to be monitoring the situation, and we can expect anything. You know, we don't know. First of all, the declaration should be official in terms of legal, because there are like some kind of opposition within the country that people say that didn't follow the procedures and it's not valid. So we have to monitor what is going to happen at the end.
That was Martha Koloma, Amnesty International campaigner for Anglophone countries in West Africa. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Journalists who cover parliament in Zimbabwe received new instructions Wednesday requiring them to get police clearance before approval to report on proceedings. As Erwin Chifera reports, media groups find this unsettling.
In a letter to journalists, the parliament's principal public relations officer, Tanyara Zwalinda Manyemba, said parliament will now be requiring journalists to bring police clearance and a letter from the news media organization they work for to attain accreditation to cover parliament. This is in addition to the required Zimbabwe Media Commission approved press card. The letter invites all journalists interested in covering parliament business into Park House Public Relations Department with the original ID card and Media Commission card, and in addition, two driver's license site photos, fingerprints forms cleared by the Zimbabwe Republic Police, and a supporting letter from the media organization. The security officials are reportedly not happy with the coverage of parliamentary proceedings published on online publications and the private media. Independent journalist Robert Tafmane said the new demands are without any basis.
So for us, it's quite surprising. We would want to know the reason behind was that. And on top of that, if they think that they are going to stop the outflow of information from parliament, that's a non-starter.
Another female parliamentary journalist who declined to be named said parliament's demands were too much, as it means that journalists would pay more for accreditation.
I think parliament is asking for too much from journalists. And basically the fact that we have to be accredited by Zimbabwe Media Commission and then to be accredited by parliament as well, I think it's just too much for journalists.
It costs $5 to get accredited with the Zimbabwe Media Commission, but journalists would have to pay more as it costs $10 to get a police clearance. Zimbabwe Union of Journalists Secretary General Foster Dongozi classified the police clearance requirement as unacceptable. Kumbirai Mafunda, chairman of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, Zimbabwe, said MISA was equally concerned and the whole move by Parliament was an attempt to stifle the free flow of information from the legislature.
Just a matter of adding another layer of restriction amongst what journalists do encounter. For information, as we have already stated, journalists are already accredited by the Zimbabwe Media Commission, and they are also required to be accredited to cover national events. We have seen it in Vic 4s and everywhere. So this, we see it as an attempt to restrict the free flow of information.
He added that it was very worrying given that the latest move comes after Parliament security officials tried to bar journalists from doing live updates from Parliament last year. Speaker Mudenda later made a ruling allowing journalists to use their cell phones and other gadgets to do live updates from the press gallery in Parliament building. Mudenda could not be reached for comment. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The goal of eradicating polio worldwide is within sight, but public health officials must make sure that vaccines administered after that point cannot cause a recurrence of the disease. Researchers in Britain have come up with a safe strain that would prevent polio reinfection. VOA's Jessica Burma reports.
Polio vaccines are stockpiled for use into the foreseeable future to prevent another epidemic of paralytic polio once the disease is officially eradicated. Experts say there is always a chance the live weakened virus used to make the warehouse drugs risking new cases of polio. There have also been instances in which mutated viral strains survive in the gut of immune-compromised people after they've been vaccinated. At the urging of the World Health Organization, British researchers have developed safe seed strains from which to make polio vaccine. They modified viral RNA to make the resulting strains genetically stable. The strains that are now used have, in rare cases, mutated into dangerous forms. Vaccines made from the new seed strains would not pose a health hazard at manufacturing facilities, nor be dangerous if they entered into the environment, according to British National Institute for Biological Standards and Control Virology Division head Philip Miner. He helped develop the new strains for polio vaccine, which researchers describe in the journal PLOS Pathogens.
In the very end game period, more inactivated polio vaccine will be used because that's what you need to do to make sure that you haven't missed anything, if you like. And certainly WHO are very keen on getting more and more manufacturers to make this stuff. So if you do that and you use a very much safer strain, I think you're a bit more secure than if you go with what we have at the moment.
Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Ethiopian Iman Merga clocked 28 minutes and 50 seconds to triumph in the 10-kilometer race at the IAAF cross-country permit meet in Campasio San Giorgio su Legnani in Italy on Wednesday. Ethiopian World Junior cross-country champion Yasin Haji was runner-up ahead of Kenyan Jairus Birech. Meanwhile, Kenyan Alice Aprot prevailed in the 6-kilometer women's race in a course record of 18 minutes and 56 seconds. Kenyan-born Ruth Jebet of Bahrain was second ahead of Lynette Masai of Kenya. Turning to football, Abdul Rwatubyaye put hosts Rwanda ahead in the first half before Maumi Ngamalu replied after the interval as Cameroon held Rwanda to a 1-1 draw in Gishenyi on Wednesday. Elsewhere, Nigeria and Angola played to a 1-1 draw in the South African capital, Tshwane. All four teams are gearing up for the African Nations Championship starting in Kigali, Rwanda, next week. In Nigeria, the 2015 Africa Football of the Year will be crowned at the GLO Confederation of African Football Awards ceremony in the Nigerian capital Abuja today, Thursday. Ivory Coast's reigning Africa Football of the Year, Yahya Toure, Ghanaian Andre Ayew, and Gabonese Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang are the finalists for Africa's most prestigious football award for an individual player. In Switzerland, suspended FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valls has had his suspension extended for 45 days, the FIFA Ethics Committee's adjudicatory chamber disclosed in Zurich on Wednesday. Valls was initially suspended for 90 days in response to allegations of inappropriate conduct regarding World Cup ticket sales. That suspension expired on Monday. However, the FIFA Ethics Committee's adjudicatory chamber has exercised its prerogative to extend the suspension to allow further assessment of the corruption allegations against Valk. Finally, a record 22 nations are registered for the week-long Africa Men's Olympic Volleyball Qualifier starting in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo today, Thursday. They are Angola, Algeria, Botswana, Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Cape Verde Islands, Central African Republic, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Egypt. Others are Gabon, Gambia, Ghana, Kenya, Madagascar, Mali, Mozambique, Nigeria, Sudan, Tunisia, Uganda, Zimbabwe, and hosts Republic of Congo. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. That's it for this Thursday, January 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, U.S. President Barack Obama will deliver his final State of the Union address. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss his speech and his foreign policy agenda for Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Next
on Reporters Roundtable. Join me, Douglas Impuga, on Reporters Roundtable. I'll have African journalists and expert guests discuss the big events in Africa in the year 2015. So please join us on Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.